Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Markman Madness on Blog Talk Radio, driven by Mancini Media. Our producer is Mr. Mark Mancini, Mr. Pittsburgh. I'm Mark Heffernan. You can contact me by going to one of my email sites, markheff20@gmail.com, markheff20@gmail.com. Oh, my other site, sportsrapnet@yahoo.com, sportsrapnet@yahoo.com. 347-205-9631 is our number, 347-205-9631. Well, the Pac-12 men's basketball tournament is about to get underway on Wednesday. Arizona, the top seed, 18-2. In the conference, UCLA, number two at 15-5 because they beat USC the other day. The Trojans, number three seed at 14-6. And Colorado, number four at 12-8. Okay, some of the games on Wednesday, first round action we have at noon. Number eight, Arizona State against number nine, Stanford. Number five, Oregon takes on number 12, Oregon State University. Now, why is OSU in a tournament? Because everybody gets into the tournament. The record was 1-19. One win, 19 losses. I'm against all these conferences having everybody get into the tournament. You know, maybe 8 out of 10 or 10 out of 12 in the Pac-12. Not everybody. I know it's a moneymaker, but, you know, really who wants to watch Oregon and Oregon State unless you are a fan of either team? Seriously. Even UCLA clobbered Oregon State, and UCLA doesn't have a good offense. 1-19, did they earn that their spot in the conference tournament, really? There was a local team here in town where I grew up against that was 1-9, and they play in kind of an upper echelon league for Bakersfield. They got into a lower division for the playoffs, did very well before they finally got beaten state. They were 1-9 and 14-20 this year, 20 losses, I should say. And they were not playing modern day in some of the top teams in the state. Okay, beyond that, we have number 7 Washington State against number 10 Cal. Number 6 Washington against Utah. Utah 4-16. Do I think they deserve to be in the conference tournament? No, I don't. See, the tournaments are not set up for the best teams. They're set up for the bottom teams to give them another chance, as if they haven't had enough chances overall. I mean, if you're 4-16, you've had chances to win games in your conference. And overall, maybe 8 wins or so, whatever. Okay, LeBron James, man. LeBron James! 56 points. You know, during that game, I was broadcasting one of about 11 youth basketball games in Lindsay, California, which is by Visalia, 60 miles south of Fresno, southeast, and 60 miles north of Bakersfield. So I missed that performance salt later on. I had games from 10 a.m. until 9 p.m. on Saturday at the McDermott Center in Lindsay. Outstanding kids playing and good sportsmanship. Had a chance to interview the player of the game after every 11 games. The only problem was that generally I got who was playing maybe 1 or 2 minutes prior to when I had to go on the air. I was about probably 50 feet away from the official scorer's table, and the coaches are writing in the starting lineup. And when the clock says, finishing maybe 1 minute before the start of the game, so I run back over there. What I did is I took a picture of the starting lineup, you know, in the book, and then I try to write things down quickly. Usually I wrote down the lineup for one team, and the other one was on my phone. So like when I got to the half, then I can write the other one down. So that was the only thing that was a little bit bugged me. One guy came up and goes, you know, you mispronounced a name on one of these teams. I go, what team? This is the 10th game of 11 today. And I said, it doesn't make any difference now, does it? The game's already ended. But I said, do you realize that I'm actually reading handwritten, you know, names? People I don't even know. A looks like a U. O looks like an A, blah, blah, blah. I said, even my glasses on, I can't make them out, so I'm doing the best that I can. Any rate, that was a lot of fun. LeBron, 56 points. Great shooting percentage. The Lakers actually won a game. They defeated Golden State 124-116. They play better against the Warriors than they do about those Clippers of Mark Mancini. That's his team. That's about the only LA team he likes, the Los Angeles Clippers. Okay, honey. Jaquez scored 27 points, had 6 rebounds. As UCLA snapped a 5-game losing streak against USC, winning 75-68 at Pauley. Now, Mobley had 28 for USC, 20 for 6 UCLA as a Pac-12 second seed, and they will play Thursday at 6 p.m. Number 23-ranked Bruins baseball team blasted Oklahoma 15-3 in 7 innings. That was Saturday in a tourney in Houston. A Sunday at Minute Maid Park, UCLA handed Texas its first loss of the season after 11 wins. As UCLA won 5-1, Bruins lefty Kelly Austin fanned 8. over 5 1/3 innings. And very quickly, NFL suspended Falcons wide receiver Calvin Ridley indefinitely through at least the end of the 2022 season. He bet on NFL games during the 2021 season. Now, he said he only wagered $1,500, so it's not that big of a deal. Well, maybe not to him. Asai Rufus, Bakersfield High, Nevada, Reno, the quality control offensive coach for San Francisco. The quality control offensive coach? Now, is that a new position? Did they create that one for him? Okay. Now he's 24 years old. They're not playing the NFL. Shaq turning 50. When he was 28, he had 61 points, 23 rebounds for the Lakers in a win. Colby Covington, now he's calling out Dustin Poirier. Come on, I want you. That's what he's saying. Yes. Okay. Welcome to Markman Madness here on Blog Talk Radio, driven by Mancini Media. I'm Mark Heffernan. My first guest is David Finoli, author, writer, shoo-shoo, rah-rah. He's a Pittsburgh guy. What's happening?
How are you doing?
Hey, pretty good. I like to fire it up, man. It's nice and warm here. Cold, you know, now to me it's cold overnight when it's like 32, 35 in March here in Bakersfield in the Central Valley. We had some rain over the weekend. And the Southern Sierra Nevadas were beautiful on Sunday. The hills by Lindsay and Visalia were the super green when I left a Sunday, and I could see this big old peak in Southern Sierra Nevadas that was covered with snow to the top. So the snow must have been up to 8,000, 10,000 feet. That was Sunday. Things have warmed up today. David, you have quite a podcast. I guess it's the 412 All Access Pittsburgh.
Yes, sir.
On Mancini Media. Tell me about that podcast.
Well, we like to celebrate Pittsburgh sports. We talk about history with my guest and friend of 40-some years, Chris Fletcher, former editor of Pittsburgh Magazine. And we just have a good time talking different angles of Pittsburgh sports, whether it be the prospects for the Pirates or the round ball tournament that used to pit some of the great high school stars to the Civic Arena, to our favorite, coming on their 50th year of extinction, the Pittsburgh Condors, the one of the worst basketball teams in the history of the professional sport. But we like to have some fun and spend an hour talking to some guests that know a good bit about what we're talking about in Pittsburgh sports.
Well, I'm answering a question from Jack from Youngstown, Ohio. He says, how much coffee has the Heffman had tonight? None. Haven't drank any coffee since, I think, Sunday morning. I was just working out
there
about an hour ago. It pumps me up. When I work out, it pumps me up. It gets me ready to rock, ready to go. So when I feel strong about a subject, I roll. You know, hey, man, you got to be entertaining, whether it's radio or doing a podcast. No reason to be boring. Oh. I'm not doing a tea party here. I'm not announcing classical music, which I did at one time when I had to sound boring on purpose for the listeners. I don't like to sound boring on the air. So if I'm going to be on for an hour, it's going to be exciting. Otherwise, I'll do something else, like maybe sweep or cut trees for my sister up in the Bay Area, something like that. David Crowley on MMM, Markman Madness. Now, you went to Greensburg Central Catholic High School in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. Now, how close is that to Pittsburgh?
The home of the Fighting Centurions, of course.
A good
35 minutes outside of Pittsburgh. So not
Fighting Centurions, oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
And Mancini should have gone there. Mancini,
I don't know
to California. He should have been a fighter.
Had he gone to the Fighting Centurions, he may have stayed in Pittsburgh. You never know.
Well, you also study at DePaul University. That's a fairly prominent university. Graduated in the early 80s. Now you're in Monroeville, Pennsylvania. So are you primarily in western Pennsylvania?
I've lived my life there. And, Monroeville is only about 15 minutes outside of Pittsburgh, but lived my life there. Wouldn't have it any other way. Just enjoy the town, enjoy the sports, enjoy everything it has to offer.
What were your favorite sports playing when you were growing up?
Well, we all loved playing baseball back then. Certainly, I could never figure out how to hit the damn ball. So, you know, I went from little leagues into, you know, doing nothing but watching it and playing in the sand lots. And actually, back then, I would figure out some of those strange stats that the coaches could use at the school, you know, before sabermetrics was a thing.
Well, David, you've written 32 books on Pittsburgh sports. So you've taken a lot of time researching sports in the Pittsburgh area. That's amazing. How long has it taken you to write those 32 books? How many years have you been working on writing about the story of Pittsburgh sports?
I published my first one in 2001, which was ironically my only one, which wasn't about the Pittsburgh area. It was a book called For the Good of the Country, which was about baseball in World War II. And then after that, I was lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time when a company called Sports Publishing, Inc. was wanting to get a book on the Pirates, an encyclopedia on them. So we wrote the Pittsburgh Pirate Encyclopedia along with my roommate at Duquesne, Bill Rainier. And since then, I've done anywhere from 2 to 3 books a year. It's just the research is something I can't get enough of. I'll be researching at night thinking it's maybe 10 or 10:30. I'll look up, it's 1 in the morning, and, you know, you just get kind of lost in it.
So you wrote about the We Are Family Pirates, 79, right?
Absolutely. That was my freshman year.
You know why Pittsburgh had great teams in the 70s and 80s in baseball? Because they had great mm-hmm. players. So let me ask you, you're a Pittsburgh guy. You know, you love Pittsburgh like Mancini does. What's happened to the organization? Why aren't they trading for or developing players like they had in the past? Is it because there's so many other teams in Major League Ball and the talent is kind of spread out? What's happened to the Pirates organization? I saw a few games on TV last year on Major League Baseball Network, and there was nobody in the stands. I know people are not going to come out to watch a team that's, you know, losing games, but, you know, they gave up an outstanding second baseman to the Padres. So what's happening with the organization? What is their future? What are their goals?
Well, the organization, I will say right now, is on the right track. This is a good organization. But Ben Charrington heads it, and he has taken what was an atrocious minor league system. I live close to Altoona, which is where their double-A team is located. And a couple years ago, under Neil Huntington, the scary part was you looked into what should be your most talented team, because double-A is where the good prospects end up. I mean, in A-ball, you have a ton of them that need weeded out. And in AAA, you have a lot of old players trying to fill spots. So in AA, you're pure prospects. And there was not any true major league prospect I saw there. That was a little frightening. Right now, Charrington, in 2 years, in what many experts have claimed is one of the best drafts and ages in baseball in 2021, he has put together what Baseball America has as the number three system, and I believe MLB had it at the number two system. So help is on the way, and he has a good track record of developing. That's what Neil Huntington was horrific at. He was horrific at having people to develop talent and didn't do that. Most of the talent that came up when they made their three-year playoff run was from the previous regime. So Huntington was good at finding major league players with some potential and getting them to kind of fill out that level. But we hadn't had a pitcher. I mean, even Gerrit Cole, you can't claim, was somebody who we developed well, because he wasn't that good when he went to the Houston Astros. And, you know, became good with other organizations. And that happened far too much. They were horrible at developing pitchers. They were horrible at finding talent in Latin America, which you'd think with the advantage of having Roberto Clemente in your history would be a lot easier. But it was just a horrible organization, even though they had won a few years. And Ben Charrington has drastically turned it around. And next year you will start seeing the benefits of what he's done. So hopefully he's put it together some good options to develop these players, and that we'll start winning again in 2023-24 range. But I give him great credit for what he's done so far.
So are you saying that they were not developing the players once they got to the Major League Baseball level?
Horrible job at it. Once they got to the Triple A level. They would be fine till Double A, and then when they get to Triple A, they'd start regressing. And by the time they got to the major league level, I mean, great Gregory Polanco, for example, is an incredible talent who just never was able to put it all together. Starling Marte is a lot better. He probably has the talent to be one of the top two or three players in Major League Baseball, but never really got to that. And last year, he really started showing signs of that.
Do you attribute that to coaching at Pittsburgh?
I attribute it to the development. I think when you're at the major league level, it's, you know, and you don't have that development, you're not going to get it. It's just too late at that point. And, you know, they're trying to get different things out of you. So I attribute it all to their minor league development system.
Well, you know, Mancini, I thought I was going to go out for second base last year, you know, in spring training. So I don't know if he's probably changing his mind now because you're getting some great talent coming up.
Well, if he does it, he better do it this year. And I hope they don't strike out because starting next year, you're going to have some top-notch talent. Nick Gonzalez is the second baseman who's coming up, and he's just a pure hitter. Good gap power. Reminds me a little of Mike Greenwell, who was a great player for the Red Sox in the 80s. But, you know, I think people are going to be surprised at what they see. Next year, they should start competing for .500. Year after, they should be competing for a postseason spot.
Well, I think Mancini's picking them to win the World Series in 2025. He keeps on throwing out 2025 to me. So,
I hope they can do it by then. I would think they'll be competing.
Well, you know, they have a nice ballpark, so it'll be good for them to, you know, improve their talent on the field because they have great tradition in Pittsburgh, and like I said, a very nice ballpark. And I think Major League Baseball needs them in the National League to, you know, up their talents, up their play. That would be good.
Yeah.
In the 70s and 80s, who were your favorite Pittsburgh Pirate players in the 70s and 80s?
Well, I would say Roberto Clemente was my first, as well as anybody who had the honor of seeing him play. I mean, just, you know, he took the team on his back in 71. At 37 years old, he had to introduce himself to a nation who really didn't know much about one of the greatest players in the game. You know, he's had a hit in every World Series game he's ever played in, 14 for 14. The only Pirate to ever get 3,000 hits in a Pirate uniform, and certainly died a heroic death. And even today, on December 31st, there'll be a ton of flowers laid at his statue at the stadium, and people still get emotional when they talk about his death. And he is the most beloved Pittsburgh athlete by far, and I even think the most beloved citizens of Pittsburgh by far, even today. So he was my favorite. Loved Tony Pena, Stargell, of course. Bill Robinson was one of my favorites. And Jim Bibby and his, 10-foot pores. The man would sweat in the middle of 10-degree weather. You know, they were all.
And what were your thoughts on Dave Parker, the big right fielder, Dave Parker?
He was one of the great talents of the game. I mean, you certainly were irritated if you were a Pittsburgh fan knowing he was involved in the drug trials in the 80s. But as a talent, he's a Hall of Famer. I get frustrated that he doesn't get more serious consideration because, I mean, he had a Hall of Fame career and in the 70s was the best player in the game for a 4 or 5 year period.
Didn't he have batteries thrown at him a couple of times during games?
Yeah, idiots. Absolute idiots. You know, but
that could definitely hurt.
Yeah, no, he wore a helmet out there, if I'm not mistaken. But they were idiots. I mean, absolutely. I don't care what the situation is. That's just you don't deserve to have the honor of watching a Major League Baseball game.
Well, you look at football, and the fans are farther away, you know, from the players, because normally there's a track, there's more space. Basketball, you're the closest, obviously. The players can hear what you say when you heckle them. Well, you're not necessarily as close, but you are in the outfield. You're farther away as fans from the infield than the outfield because of the way the fields are set up. the center field and left field and right field, the fans are very close to the players, especially when they're trying to catch a foul ball or something like that. So Parker hurt a lot in right field during his career, and a lot of things that were said to him probably were not that nice. And a lot of it had to do with the fact he was a very good player, and Pittsburgh was a top-notch team then. When you're not really winning, people don't talk to you as much, whether it's negative or positive. They don't really care.
Right.
And, you know, one thing you probably know that, or maybe you don't know, I'm a Dodger fan, and the Dodgers kind of have Pittsburgh's number. I think they won, like 14 or 15 consecutive games over the Pirates over a couple of years. But according to Mancini, that's going to change. You know, it's hard to beat another team 14 or 15 times straight in baseball, because if a lower division team has a great pitcher on the mound, he's having a good game, you could win. It's the same in high school and college. It's hard to win every game in baseball. But you're saying that Pittsburgh is on its road back. They're going to develop talent now. They've drafted some outstanding players. The whole key is developing players at the major league level. And that's when you start winning, the fans will start coming back, just like in L.A. And I think Pittsburgh needs to have a good team. Of course, the Steelers have been a prominent team for many years. You're talking about your favorite players for the Pittsburgh Pirates in the 70s and 80s. Who were your favorite Pittsburgh Steelers players in the 70s and 80s? Because we know they won four titles in 6 years in the late 70s. Who are some of your favorite players? You can name more than one, because they're probably like anywhere between 5 and 10.
I was a defensive guy, so Mel Blount, Jack Ham, Jack Lambert, Green, Greenwood, Ernie Holmes, who was probably, Chuck Noll often said, was a better talent than Joe Green or Elsie Greenwood, but obviously had his mind screwed up. I believe he was on drugs, if I'm not mistaken, but as a talent level, he was fun to watch, Arrowhead. To put together such a defense, Andy Russell, Mike Wagner, Donnie Schell, who just got into the Hall of Fame this year. To me, over the course of time, you can point out to the 84 Bears might have been better, but over the course of a decade, there was no better defense in the history of the game than what the Steelers put on the field. And to me, when you're talking great defenses, that's more impressive than anything somebody can do in 1 year. The 76 team, over the course of they lost their four of their first five games and then put on a defensive show, 39 points in 10 games they gave up.
Wow. 3.9.
Six shutouts in that. And that, to me, the only reason they didn't win the Super Bowl that year is they lost Harris and Blyer in the divisional game. They crushed the Colts 40-14 and then just had no offense left due to injuries in the against Oakland. But to me, that is the best defense ever put together.
Franco Harris, Rocky Blyer, Terry Bradshaw, Lynn Swann, Stallworth. Great players, man. Swann, he made a lot of incredible catches, didn't he? He suffered a lot of injuries during his career, but he was quite an athlete at USC and also for Pittsburgh.
Yeah. No, he was a tremendous athletic presence in an era where receivers got the crap beat out of them. And the game resembles nothing today that it was back then because receivers today don't have to worry what they had to worry about back then. And still with that.
You're about a guy knocking their head off and you make the catch.
Yeah.
You have Jack Tatum nearby and you're playing the Raiders. Watch out.
He went through that.
Do you remember a guy by the name of Theophilus Bell? Theo Bell? He was a wide receiver for Pittsburgh, probably played maybe late 70s. He played for Bakersfield High School. I played in a game against him. He was like the top player for BHS back then. And I remember trying to run him down. There was a play where he returned a kickoff, and everybody thought that he touched his knee down, so everybody stopped playing. Then he got up and started running. And my friend Stanley Flimbers and I tried to chase him the last 6 yards. We never caught up to him, but the play was called back to the 30-yard line.
Oh, wow.
But Theo Bell, Theophilus Bell, and he was an excellent player at Arizona State, then, of course, played for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, was a good receiver. Was a good number three man. So he was quite the contributor to some of those late teams.
Well, you know, talk about the great defense that Pittsburgh had. What's amazing about that time, that the stage of football, NFL, is that players stayed one team longer. You didn't have the big money that they're making now with free agency and trade. So now, then you can keep, you know, a unit together for anywhere from 5 to 8 years. Now when guys win a championship, and maybe two, they'll not go somewhere else for more money. They won't necessarily go to a squad that's better. You look at the Rams now, some guys may leave the Rams because they finally won a championship, and it could be a case of money. But they may go to a team that doesn't have potential to be as good as the Rams next year or the following year. Guys don't really care about that. If they're going to make $10 million or more per year, they go elsewhere. Whereas back then, Pittsburgh was able to keep a lot of those studs for a number of years. As you mentioned, they had a lot of great players over a 7 or 8 year span. Most of them stayed with the Steelers. They didn't go elsewhere after 2 or 3 years. That's a mark of having a great team and winning 4 titles in 6 years. It doesn't happen anymore. I mean, Dallas won 3 times in 4 years. When's the last time the Dallas Cowboys won a Super Bowl? Now, I know every year the media, NFL Network, picks the Cowboys to be in the Super Bowl. I'm thinking, you talk about the most overhyped team in professional sports. I don't really dislike the Cowboys, but you know, I look at the Lakers. Lakers are my team. They're kind of overhyped when it comes to the NBA. Every year, like, they have all these older players this year with LeBron, and they think, you know, a healthy Anthony Davis, they were the favorites to win the NBA, and they probably won't even play in the play-in game this year. So the Lakers are a very overhyped team. But the Dallas, to me, is even more overhyped because when's the last time Dallas really had a great team, an exceptional team?
Yeah,
95. You know, I just think
they
kind of flopped against
San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, the last time the Cowboys had an exceptional team.
Yeah, that was 95. I mean, this was probably their best team since 95 this year, and I thought it was a little above average.
And the Niners are great teams. Niners are great teams in the 80s, won 5 championships. Yeah. But they were able to keep, you know, Montana and their players, Jerry Rice and a lot of key players together for a long time. And then they had Steve Young. Amazing, he was the backup. You know, you have 2 Hall of Famers. One guy backed up the other guy. Young was so good, they sent off Montana to Kansas City because they still wanted to play. That's the kind of talent that they had. But you know, you talked about some of your favorite Steelers players, and you talked about some of your favorite Pirates players. Do you cover hockey at all? Do you have
Who's
your favorite player in the Penguins right now?
So, if you're a Penguin fan, you love Sidney Crosby because here's a guy that for 17 years has given you 120% every night. He never takes a night off. Even Mario Lemieux would pout and he'd go through streaks where he just didn't play well because he was pouting because he was mad about something or another. You never see that with Sidney Crosby. And what he does for the community is incredible. You know, you couldn't ask as a franchise, you couldn't ask for a more perfect representative of your franchise than Sidney Crosby. And, you know, he's just a joy to watch every day. But you look at this team, even with him, they're going to be in the playoffs this year for the 15th consecutive year. That's tough to do. So you give, I mean, I say that about Mario, the player. Mario as an owner has been the perfect owner, you know, and has given this team everything it's needed. And it is the number one franchise in Pittsburgh at this point, even with the Steelers winning. It's a Penguin town right now.
Hey, Mama,
and has been probably
here
for the last 5-6 years.
When you talk about Mario Lemieux, when you talk about Sidney Crosby,
those are two
of the greatest players in the NHL over the years.
And add to that, Jaromir Jagr and Malkin. I mean, there has been a lot of excellence in this town over the years. At one point in time, they had won like 11 of 12 individual scoring chances over a period of time. But we've been lucky because when I grew up, Penguins were the embarrassment of the NHL. I'd buy a ticket for $5 to sit at the top of the arena, and I'd be on the glass by the end of the first period because nobody was there. To see what, I mean, even when Mario Lemieux pouting, what he brought to that franchise in 1984 and just was the most amazing. He was a better talent than Wayne Gretzky. Wayne Gretzky was a better leader and a better overall player. But when you talk offensive talent, there was nobody better than Mario Lemieux.
David Fanola, host of the 412 All Access Pittsburgh podcast on Mancini Media. How can people get in touch with you, David?
On Facebook at David Fanoli, Finoli. On Twitter at DFanoli. And again, that's Finoli. And they can get a hold of me there, and I will answer whatever they need.
Hey, Dave, thanks a lot for being on Markman Madness.
Well, been a pleasure. Been a pleasure.
Hey, take care, man.
Thank you.
Bye. And you're listening to Markman Madness here on Blog Talk Radio, driven by Mancini Media. Our producer is Mark Mancini, the one and only. I'm Mark Heffernan. Our number, 347-205-9631. 347-205-9631.
What's the email for
Coach? Coaching basketball in SoCal. He is gone, at least from that. He is Mr. Michael Lynch. Welcome to MMM. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. Hey, you're a detective with the Los Angeles Police Department for many years. And at the time, you're also coaching basketball, so you kind of went from being a detective, looking out for guys like Mark Mancini down there, making sure he's doing okay in the LA area, and coach at Price High, basketball head coach for many years, 1996 through May of 2015, won 10 Southern Section titles, 8 state championships, wow, and then moved to LaSalle High School, where you're the head coach until the present time from 2015. Also, chief security at Crenshaw Christian Center, and you have a new nonprofit organization, A Coach Is Inc. in Inglewood. Let's talk about your time as a detective. So why did you like detective work?
You know what? With LAPD in 1984 Did 10 years of patrol work, and then I promoted to detective and served another 5 years, 10 months in that capacity. Loved it. I loved investigation and helping people, you know, and it was a blessing because I would get on the scene after things had gone wrong and be able to help families get some peace about what just occurred. So it was a great time.
Well,
it was a great time.
Yeah, you started coaching at Price High before you finished as a detective with LAPD. Why did you decide to give up the detective work? Were you tired of it? Just wanted to do something else?
Well, no. I was coaching at the same time that I was doing the police work, and my schedule, it just wouldn't work. I had a very understanding supervisor that would let me go early for practice. If I had a game, you know, and get out of here type of thing. But you know, that wasn't going to last forever. So I had to make a choice. And so I chose to go with my passion, my purpose, you know, what was in my heart. So I resigned on one day and was a reserve for about 8 years the next day.
Did you ever get a text during the time you were coaching when you were on the bench about some murder, some kind of situation that was happening and they wanted you right now to go and investigate during the middle of a basketball game?
I never ran into anything like that. If it was something that I had to handle the next day, it would wait. I never worked homicide, so I didn't have that kind of urgency.
Yeah, I thought about that when I was looking over your information the other day. So I got to ask him that question. It may sound stupid, but sometimes I ask questions that are a little bit idiotic, but I just figured I would ask you. I was wondering because because I've known some detectives here in Bakersfield. I work for the Sheriff's Department or the BPD in Bakersfield, California. Okay, a Price High School coach did a great job winning all those championships, Southern Section, state titles. Now, did you have great talent? Well, it must have been a combination of talent and your coaching. Had to be.
Well, you know, I'd love to say I was this amazing coach. And that, you know, I made it all happen. I have to correct something here. For the record, I went to 8 state championships. We won 6 of them.
Okay.
I sure wish I could go back and get those other 2, but I don't want to take credit for something that didn't
happen. That's 75%, man. Hey, that's 75%, 3/4.
Yeah.
Nothing all bad.
Yes. But what happened was, you know, I took over a really small program. First of all, Price High School was a small school itself. My time there never had over 80 young people in high school. That's boys and girls included. And, you know, the first year 1996 there. We went 12-11 and didn't make the playoffs. And so I just went back to my source. I just prayed. I prayed to God that he would send the right student athletes into the program, and he sure did. He went over and above for us. So we started getting young people that were already at the school, others that were interested in coming, and it just blew up. I didn't see it happening.
But God thought. He knew it was going to happen.
Yes. Yes, he did.
And he prepared you for that.
Yep. And all I had to do was be obedient, keep the faith.
Yeah, Coach, what division did you compete in at Price High in the state playoffs?
We were in Division Five.
Mm-hmm.
And because, it was enrollment based.
Yes.
And then ultimately, they went away with enrollment, and one of our state championships was in Division Four. That was in 2010.
Okay.
That was the last one, yeah.
I once did, years ago, Garces Memorial, which I went to school there. I broadcast their games for a while. They had a 7-foot center. They advanced to the Southern Regional Division IV Championships, and they lost to Horizon, Crossroads from Horizon.
Yeah.
And at that time, Crossroads had about 2-4s or maybe 6-7, 6-8, and they had a lot of depth. They played about 9 or 10 players. They pressed the entire game. Garza had a phenomenal starting five, only used one player off the bench, and the player off the bench didn't do much. So it was a case where I didn't think the center played that well for Garza. He actually was going to go to USC. He decided to skip that and turn pro, played for the Sonics for a while, messed up his knee, never really did much in the NBA. I mean, he was 6'11", 7 feet as a freshman in high school. He went from Garza to Highland to BHS, kind of weird what he was doing. They're one of the guards, Shiloh, went to Nevada Reno, was a pretty good player there. Shiloh was the head coach of Bigson Christian for a few years. Now he runs his own academy here in town, has a lot of events. They had a guy named Anthony Esparza, the other guard, who went to, I believe he went to UOP and played. And then the small forward, who had averaged 15 points a game, only had 1 point, one, in that Southern Region final. He went, there was reasons for that, which I won't get into on the air. He went to Cal State Bakersfield as a track athlete. He was a high jumper. He just didn't have it that day. And the power four was maybe 6'3", 6'4". He was just kind of consistent. But they played a better team, a team that was deeper than them, and they lost in a close game. To me, Shiloh was the best player on Garza's team that year. He was very smooth. He handled the press very well. Esparza was okay, but the guys up front didn't do much of a job, especially the 7-footer. All he did is catch a few lobs and put them in. He didn't really have an outside, mid-range jumper. And also, Garza has missed a number of free throws late in the game. And, those close games, you have to knock them down. So, Garza competes kind of lower echelon. But whether you won 8 or 6, it's impressive. 6 state championships out of 8 trips. And then you said 10 Southern Section titles. And there are some outstanding teams in the Southern Section, the biggest section in the country. There are more schools in the Southern Section than in most states in the USA. And that's just in the Southern Section, as you know, and in all divisions. Anytime you win a Southern Section, you're beating some good teams, whether they have 50 players or 75 or 100. There's a lot of talent in the Los Angeles area and the surrounding areas like that, and you know about that. So we talked about your championship-winning teams, a combination of talent, getting some kids to go out for the team that were already there, some other kids coming in, and you're coaching. What would your philosophy be as a coach? Were you a strict disciplinarian? Were you a player's coach or a combination of the two?
I think it was a combination of the two. But the one strength that I believe I possess is that, I have a knack for getting the guys to believe in themselves.
Amen.
And actually play above their natural talent. And I push team first, always push team first. And when you get a group of guys that believe in themselves, they have some talent, and then they're willing to be great teammates, you got a dangerous combination there. And that was the ultimate reason for our success.
Coach, what does it take for an individual player to be a great teammate?
Well, you have to get out of self. Like, I had rules of, you know, guys wanting to know how many points did I score. They, you know, go over to the scorebook. They knew that was taboo. I mean, that was almost like you committed murder. Because what that let me know, you were more interested in yourself than you were in us getting a victory. So I would preach those things at practice. Make the best pass. I know you knocked down that shot, but your buddy was open for a better shot. And so it was just part ingrained in our program. Team first, selfless play, and hard work, faith, all that combination equals success.
And Coach, I broadcast 11 youth games Saturday in Lindsay by Visalia. The games were about 50 to 52 minutes in length. And then after the game, I interviewed the player of the game. And then I had to run over there and get the starting lineups for each team. And some of the coaches were late in doing that. So I took a picture of both starting lineups. Then I had to run to my desk and try to write them down and then go on the air. That got a little hectic. I started getting tired about the ninth game. Then some guy kind of bugged me a little bit. And I was in kind of a sour mood for about 10 minutes. And I said, Lord, give me strength. And then I was fine after that. That's going to happen. Yeah. You know, you're doing games from 10 a.m. until 9 p.m. And the people around me are great. Myron Epps does a great job of the program there in Lindsay. And I think he's part of that West Coast elite. He was a star in Tulare County years ago, played at San Diego State. Big dude, man, 6'7", 6'8". Not a guy you want to mess with, but one of the nicest guys in the world. Dion I, the producer, senior producer, founder of NorCal Sports Television, kind of put it together, promoted everything. And Dion will obviously say, make sure you're ready, Mark. They won't start until you're ready because he's actually putting it on. So the refs look to us, are you ready, Mark? Yeah, I think I am. Let's go for it. And so that was cool. It was nice. I mean, it's like with anything, I think to be good or great at anything, you have to be a team player, and you have to have discipline. And that doesn't mean discipline like the military. I mean, you're a former, you know, police officer, but you have to have discipline. And the thing is, you know, Dion and Myron took a picture prior to the deal, and then Myron put it on Facebook. And I mentioned on people, those are the two dudes that made it happen. I mean, there's a lot of other people as refs, but it's Dion and Myron, and we're all the refs of the show. So somebody says, are you star of the show? I said, no, those two guys are there. I'm not the star. Well, I see you behind the mic. So I said, the problem, you know, in doing a lot of radio and TV work, a lot of times they will say on-air talent, which is a person like me. They won't say video talent. They won't say producer talent. They'll say, you know, you have three videographers, three camera people, a producer, and the on-air talent. And I was telling some guys, why do they call me talented? And you people are not. Without you guys, I don't do anything. I mean, I'm nothing without you guys. Now, when I start off in radio, I would go out there and set everything up because it was easier just doing audio. But doing video, they have to live stream the whole thing. And if I tried doing that type of stuff, we may go on the air maybe halfway through the session. But without Dion and Myron and the other people, I don't do nothing. So I have to rely on them. The people will look at me. I'm interviewing the players and everything. I think I'm somewhere out of theirs. And I tell people, no, I'm just kind of doing my thing. I do the best I can. War is my strength, and I just go from there. And the guy looked at me like, really? Because I'm talking to kids that are between probably 10 years and 16 years old. So I would talk to them, ask them a few questions afterwards. What do you need to improve on with your game? What's the limit for your team? One kid said, you know, the sky's the limit. It was really cool. I didn't ask them questions that would warrant a yes or no answer. And then after I was on the air, I kind of give them a little word here and there and then go on the way. I think what's most important for me is, like you said, is to motivate them, give them a word of encouragement, because it's tough for kids out there today. And the kids I talk to are great. They're great. And I talked to them before the game, afterwards, talked to a couple of high school guys that were at the official scorer's desk, and just talked to them about their life and everything. I try to be, you know, give a couple words of encouragement to them. And tell them, you know, I appreciate you guys being out here, because if you're not playing, I'm not doing this today. So I need you more than you need me. And they kind of looked at me like, what? It was funny. Really funny.
Oh, yeah. I could imagine. But that's great teamwork.
Yes, sir.
That's great motivation Coming from somebody that these guys are looking up to, somewhat like a coach.
Michael Lynch, my guest on Markman Madness here on Blog Talk Radio. Our number 347-205-9631, 347-205-9631. Well, during the time you're coaching at LaSalle High School as head coach, you started, let's see, you were actually a security guard, chief security at the Crenshaw Christian Center. Actually, you were there from 99 through 2016. Then you started at LaSalle in 2015 to the present time. What was it like being chief security at Crenshaw Christian Center? How did that differ from your jobs as a detective with LAPD?
Well, you know, Crenshaw Christian Center, you know, obviously a very large church. So, you know, I was dealing with a different people. You know, police work is you're getting called. There are no really good calls. Something's happening for you to get a call to service. Here at, you know, at Crenshaw Christian Center, it was serving the people. It was more of a ministry than it was, police type work. So, you know, and I also served the pastor at the time, Dr. Fred Price. And so just two different worlds.
How's he doing?
Unfortunately, Dr. Price, he passed away. He went on to glory a year plus ago.
I used to watch him on TV quite a bit. I hadn't heard about him for a while. I was just wondering, but I used to watch him on TV from time to time.
Yes, and that's who taught me the faith message. And I use that message to this very day.
He was really a vibrant speaker, wasn't he? He was passionate about the Lord.
Oh, amazing, amazing man of God. Amazing.
What did he teach you about living the Christian walk? And what did he teach you about serving others, Dr. Price?
Obviously, I'm going to services there, so I'm listening to him. But his walk, the way he treated his family, the way he treated his wife, his integrity about everything he did, and he would put himself on display. So you were getting the word of God, but you were also seeing the word work. And, you know, his purpose was teaching faith. So for all those years, I'm getting that faith message, and I'm taking it and just translating it to the area of basketball, to the area of dealing with young men. Again, he was amazing in my life, just very instrumental.
Michael, in January of 2015, you started a nonprofit organization called A Coach Is Inc., INC. Why did you start that particular nonprofit organization, and what is its purpose?
You know, I was talking to me in prayer, and there were so many positive things happening with the basketball program. I mean, championships. I look around, and I'm invited to go on Fred Rogan's show, and all these things were happening, and just back to back to back, guys getting college scholarships, guys going to the pros that went through the program, and just amazing things. So I just asked the Lord, what is this all about, this success? I'm not that good. There's something going on here. And the response I got was, you know, I'm giving you credibility for what it is I have for you to do. And ultimately, that was, A Coach Is. It's a mentoring program for coaches. Because to me, that coach title is a calling. You know, it's like a teacher. You don't just become a teacher. It's got to be in you. So if you're going to answer that call of being a coach and dealing with young lives, and you better know your purpose, and you better know who you are as a coach. If not, you can do some serious damage versus doing some serious good. So thus a coach is. And that's what I'm excited about. I recently retired from doing sideline coaching, but now I'm going to be doing coaching from a different sideline.
Well, I think that coaching at the high school level is more important than coaching at the college or professional level. Obviously, we make more money at the higher level, but you're teaching kids, basically, whether it's teaching boys to become men, girls to become women, and you're coaching kids at the prime time of their life, you know, teenage years, anywhere from 14 to 18 years old, where they're being drawn from here and there to be this and to be that, and a lot of kids don't really know who they are. They're trying to find themselves personally and in athletics. It's a very tough time for many people in their lives during the teenage years. And a lot of people are able to blossom from that, and some go down the wrong path.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the, you know, a coach, when I say it's a calling, you think about it, you know, there were times I had to father young men that didn't have fathers.
Yes.
You know, had to discipline young men, you know, support them financially, spiritually. So there were many hats to being a coach. And trust me, over the 26 years, I've touched every hat that I could imagine. And but I wouldn't trade it for anything. It was just an awesome experience. And I've had the pleasure of working with some wonderful, wonderful young men. Some troubled for various reasons, but at the same time, you treat them all the same. You love them and give them everything you got, and I've watched that come back to me many times over, many times over.
Michael Lentz, my guest on MMM here on Blog Talk Radio. Our number 347-205-9631. Thank you very much for listening today on this Monday, 347-205-9631. By the way, Michael, who would be the two best players you've ever coached in all your years of high school? That's a lot of time, I guess 26 years. Who would you say are the two best or three best players you've ever coached in high school?
That would be impossible for me to say that. Because I'd have 100 calls coming in. Coach, I thought I was the best.
Yeah,
and, I couldn't do that. I just wouldn't do that. I really wouldn't.
Well, could you tell me who you thought was the best offensive player, and then best defensive player?
That would just be a pure stat. Alan Crabb averaged the most points per game for me of anybody that I coached thus far, and that was 23 points a game. And defensively, I'd have to go with a young man. And by the way, Alan ended up playing pro ball for a bunch of years. And defensively, Skylar Spencer moved on from Price to San Diego State and is still playing ball overseas. That young man could affect a ball game and have 2 points. He went after every rebound, every shot that came toward the basket. Just amazing defensive player with great timing. That's the best I can give you on.
Well, that's fine.
As far as I don't get myself in any trouble.
He's what you'd call a dog, man. The last guy, the defensive player, he's what you call a dog on defense. Like you said, he went after every loose ball. Got the rebounds, took the ball away from the opponents, and got in the face of the other players playing on defense. Great foot movement, because I always tell people, you play defense with your feet, not with your hands. I tell young people all the time, and I wasn't really much of a basketball player. My main sport was baseball. I was a shortstop, second baseman, third baseman, and pitched when I was growing up. But I know that in basketball, it's about angles. It's about cutting off angles, and you play defense with your feet. Now, I wasn't much of a shooter or scorer. But I could always play defense because I was quick and because I anticipated very well. Passes, errant passes, things like that. And so it takes a lot of discipline and work to be an outstanding defensive player. You won't get the ink.
Absolutely.
You won't get the publicity, but your coach and your coaches will know that you do, and your players, your teammates will know that you're doing the work. You're 125% all the time. The people writing on the game won't necessarily talk about you unless you win a championship or you win a lot of games in the playoffs. But as you know, being a winning coach, 6 state championships out of 8 tries, 10 Southern Section titles, you would know that defense leads to offense, and generally is the reason. Defense and discipline are 2 of the reasons why you won so much in high school at Price High and also at LaSalle High.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
And right on.
That's part of being selfless. If you can play tremendous defense and not concerned about, I only had 4 points. You know, if that's your focus, you're playing your role, and that's what you need. You need 5 guys on the floor, and everybody's going to have a different role on the floor. So,
well, Coach, I'll tell you, my role is not to score. You wouldn't want to rely on me to score, but I was a guy that you could rely on me to play defense because I didn't really care about scoring in basketball. My mindset, you know, I was more like the star in baseball, but in basketball, I was just sort of like an athlete out there. So my role would be to play defense. I played in some games since then, some fundraising games, and I got the balls to the guys, flipped it high to the air. I think one game I had 8 assists, the last fundraising game I had. I threw it towards the basket. These guys caught it and just jammed it through. So I knew my role.
Yeah.
It was to play defense, handle the ball, and get rid of it as quick as possible to the guys that can score. And I did okay, but I knew who I am. I knew who I was. So you don't have to worry about me taking a lot of shots. Michael Lynch, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, as far as a coach is, can be reached at – excuse me one second here, please. I can be reached at coachesinc@gmail.com. And my email address is coachmlynch@yahoo.com.
I love it, man. I love it. Hey, Coach, thanks a lot for being on Marksman Madness. Hey, no problem,
well,
man.
Thank you so much for having me. And if you you could have played for me, man, with that defense you were talking about.
Well,
you
I would have
been
tried.
One of my guys.
At least I would have tried. I don't have any problems with discipline. I went to a parochial school, so I know about yes, sir. I know about listening to coaches and everything. Then my dad was a Hall of Fame football player, so it's never been hard for me to listen to coaches and to say yes and to do what I'm supposed to do.
Awesome, awesome.
Thanks a lot, Coach.
Thanks again for having me.
You got it. Take care.
Bye now.
And a special thanks to David Finoli, our Pittsburgh sports guru, for being on the program today, along with Michael Lynch, former LAPD detective and head coach at Price High and LaSalle High in Southern California for many years. In fact, 26 years. He has just recently retired. He won 6 state championships in basketball and 10 Southern Section championships in either Division IV or Division V. Great interviews with both people, David from the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area, and then Michael from the Los Angeles area on today's show. Our producer was Mark Mancini. I'm Mark Heffernan. You can get in touch with me by, you know, a variety of ways. My 2 email addresses are markheff20@gmail.com or sportswrapnet@yahoo.com. And my number is 661-490-8372, 661-490-8372. God bless you. I will be in the Bay Area next week doing the show, next Monday at 5 o'clock right here. Markman Madness on Blog Talk Radio, driven by Mancini Media. I'm Mark Heffernan. God bless you. I will talk to you next week. Good night.